As an introduction, I'd like to show you a picture that I both took and staged. This was taken when I was on the faculty at the University of Nevada, and I had a neighbor across the street that really didn't quite understand the value of fertilizers. And one weekend when they were gone, I decided to give them a lesson as to the importance of nitrogen in turf. And I went over with a hose-on sprayer and sprayed some fertilizer on their yard. And about 7 days later, this is what it looked like. And I was kind of smug about it, thinking, ha-ha, what a good joke. But everyone else interpreted that they were boosters of the University of Nevada football team. And the entire joke was lost on the neighborhood. But I figured this would be the audience to share that with. Well, I'm going to talk about some of the work, and it was interesting putting this talk together because it made me look back at my career and some of the work that we've done, and to be very honest with you, it made me feel very old. A lot of young people in the audience, and I'm going to kind of treat this as a historical document, give you a little bit of perspective on where we were and hopefully where we've come. It really goes back to my master's work in the late 1970s and early 1980s. And out in California at the time, the question of nitrate in both groundwaters and surface waters was just heating up, and we had very little data. There had been a little bit of work around the country, but nothing in California. We decided to just do a very simple survey of a number of turf grass sites, and over a two-year period at two golf courses and a park, we found almost zero nitrate present in the turf system. And my major professor, the first response was, you're doing something wrong, go back and take more samples. And over 2 years, we finally had to conclude that for some reason, in spite of the fact that they were applying soluble fertilizers to all these sites, we simply were unable to find very much in the way of nitrates in the root system. This led us to question just how quickly a typical application of soluble nitrogen was immobilized by the turf. We kind of were under the impression, the assumption, that when you applied nitrogen, it lasted for the typical 3 to 4 week period, and then you applied more, at least down in California. And we ran, again, a very simple experiment. We identified several turf grass sites as research areas, and we applied soluble N sources, potassium nitrate, ammonium sulfate, ammonium nitrate, urea, it really didn't matter. And we applied these to the turf, carefully controlled the irrigation, we deposited the nitrogen in the top couple centimeters of the soil, and then simply sampled the soil over time to determine how quickly it was immobilized. It's kind of crude by today's standards, but we were just, you know, trying to find out some of the early stuff. And what we found out after analyzing the data was kind of interesting and surprised us quite a bit. We discovered that a typical 1 pound of N per 1,000 square foot application was very, very rapidly immobilized by the turf grass system. Within 48 to 72 or 96 hours, the nitrate levels and the ammonium levels, for that matter, in the root zone had dropped back to very low background levels. This was carefully controlled. We looked at volatilization, there was no volatilization. We looked at leaching, there was no leaching. We concluded that immobilization, both by plant and microorganisms, was responsible for this very rapid depletion of nitrate and ammonium. We didn't have a big budget for this. We were able to run one N15 study, and that showed approximately 75% of this immobilization was due to plant uptake, but we were unable to follow up on that at the time. But this data showed us one of the reasons, or one of the possible reasons, that we were unable, in most cases, to find any nitrate in the root zone. It's just that immobilization was so fast that nitrate or ammonium didn't hang around very long, and our sampling never picked up this couple-day period right after a fertilizer application when we might have found it. After 3 or 4 days, it simply was no longer in the system as inorganic N. Well, that's kind of where we started, and now I'm going to jump forward and kind of tell you where we are today, and then back up again and show you maybe some of the early data that supports what we now know. We know, for example, that nitrogen uptake, like the absorption of most nutrients, is regulated by transporters, and there is an entire population of transporters that we have identified. I say we, I have not identified any of these, but we know that there are multiple transporters responsible for various aspects of nitrogen uptake. With regards to nitrate uptake, we can broadly divide the uptake transporters into two categories, into two classes. One is identified as HATS, its high affinity transport systems, and we can further subdivide the HATS category into both inducible and constitutive forms of this transporter. Both of these are active at relatively low soil nitrate concentrations. One of them is essentially turned on all the time, whereas the other is induced by its substrate nitrate. The constitutive transporter is typically fairly low capacity. It does not transport a lot of nitrate, whereas the inducible high affinity transporter, once it's induced, has a very high capacity for nitrate uptake. Now, what's interesting about this is we know it's inducible. We can induce it under controlled conditions, and I'll show you some of those in a second. But the induction of this transporter requires very low concentrations of nitrate, the kind that are typically present in most turf soils all the time. A couple micromolar is enough to induce these transporters. And so under field conditions, it's very likely that the inducible high capacity transporter is on most of the time, if not all of the time. There is also a low affinity transport system, which is constitutive. It has high capacity, but it's a non-saturable system, and it is typically most active at relatively high concentrations of soil nitrate, and consequently it's unlikely that most of the time this particular transport system has much of a role in turf grass systems. We simply don't have those high nitrate concentrations in most cases. As far as ammonium transporters are concerned, a lot less work has been done on ammonium transporters, but we have identified both a high affinity and a low affinity transport system. Both are probably constitutive, although there's some evidence that there may be an induction of the high affinity transport system. But they are both certainly up and down regulated by the nitrogen status of the turf grass, in particular the root system of the turf grass system. This is some data that we collected with perennial ryegrass, and it documents that the nitrate uptake system is inducible. But to become inducible, the plant has to be nitrogen deficient. The plant has to be grown for some period of time without exposure to nitrate. And in this case, we grew perennial ryegrass both with nitrate and also without nitrate for periods of 1, 2, and 4 weeks. I want to direct your attention to this graph here. This shows the nitrate uptake rate in plants that have been grown either with nitrate continuously or deprived of nitrate for relatively short periods of time, 1, 2, or 4 weeks. And you can see the uptake rate in the well-supplied nitrogen replete plants is fairly constant and fairly low, whereas the nitrate uptake rate in the nitrogen deficient plants undergoes an induction, starts off very low, and quickly over a period of 6 to 8 hours rises to very high levels, 4 to 6 times that of the control plants, and then over the next 3 to 4 days drops down to approximately the control levels. This is the nitrate uptake pattern. Ammonium uptake pattern is a little bit different. The nitrogen deficient plants do not show an induction period compared to the control rate, which is this lower curve here. But they do show, again, a very high initial rate of absorption, again, 4 to 6 times that of the control. The graphs on the top of the page show the cumulative uptake. And what I really want to point out to you is that the uptake capacity of these nitrogen-deficient plants is very high. In fact, after a period of only 48 hours, this perennial ryegrass system has absorbed the equivalent of 1 pound of N per 1,000 square feet. So within a 2-day period, basically, they have the capacity, at least, to absorb a typical nitrogen application. In the case of ammonium, again, the same thing. A little bit less than 48 hours, nitrogen has been absorbed at that 1 pound of N rate. In fact, if you go out to 4 days, 96 hours, it has the capacity for ammonium uptake, at least, to absorb 2 pounds of N per 1,000 square feet in 4 days. Incredibly high capacity, in other words, for nitrogen uptake. With regards to the metabolism of that nitrogen, there's a little bit different picture between nitrate and ammonium. We're not going to go too much into this. Suffice it to say that About half of the nitrate that's absorbed is immobilized over that 48-hour period, whereas approximately 95%+ of the ammonium is assimilated by the plant over that 48-hour period. The plants don't like to accumulate ammonium. They don't do that. They'll do anything to avoid high ammonium levels in the tissue. And it's a fairly heavy drain on the carbohydrates in the plant. Whereas nitrate can be stored, and in this case, approximately 50% of the nitrate is being stored both in the roots and the shoots. With regards to where that nitrate is assimilated, or at least reduced, kind of an interesting pattern emerged over time. We ran mass balances looking at tissue accumulation and long-distance transport in the xylem, and what we found out was that with nitrogen-deficient plants exposed to nitrate, during the first 8-hour period, the roots are responsible for the majority of the nitrate reduction, and the shoots play a much lesser role in terms of reducing the incoming nitrate. But around 8 hours, that flip-flops. And you can see that over the next 8 to 16 hour period, the shoots take over. The majority of the nitrate reduction in this perennial ryegrass system actually occurs in the shoots, and the roots basically drop out of the equation and become more of a storage organ rather than a site of assimilation. This is for ryegrass. We've also done this with Bermuda grass, and we found a similar picture. A little bit slightly different in that over the first 8 hours, roots and shoots are both quite active, but after 8 hours, again, the root system basically drops out of the equation in terms of contributing to nitrate reduction. The shoots take over and are the major site for that reduction. As far as I mentioned carbohydrate drain, as far as carbohydrates are concerned, in perennial ryegrass, fructans are the major storage form of carbohydrates, and they are remobilized relatively quickly in both the leaves and in the roots, and in fact the roots drop down to almost zero. Fructans are preferentially used. You can see sucrose here remains fairly stable. Sucrose is highly conserved in the tissue, at least in the perennial ryegrass. But the total, over the 48-hour period, the total carbohydrates drop approximately 50% in both roots and shoots. Now, one of the things we were interested in early on was looking at the kinetic constants for uptake. The data is presented here for Kentucky bluegrass. Vmax for both nitrogen replete plus N plants and minus nitrogen deficient plants. The Vmax, which is a measure of the capacity for uptake, is dramatically increased by nitrogen deficiency. We've already seen that in some of the early curves. The Km, which is an affinity constant, both of these constants, Vmax, Km, are analogous to the Michaelis-Menten parameters. Not too much going on here in terms of the Km values, both very low. This shows that the uptake system is half-saturable, at least at very low concentrations, and probably represents that constitutive high-affinity transport system. Now, one of the things that we also found out fairly early on, or were interested fairly early on, is the root architecture. We already have found that the deficient plant, the deficient turf grass, develops this elevated capacity to absorb nitrogen, but we also felt there was a second factor, perhaps equally important, and that was the root architecture, and specifically root length density. This shows a picture, and it's a little bit unclear, but I hope that some of you can see some of these extremely fine roots in this perennial ryegrass root system. Some of these roots are approximately 120 microns across, a little bit bigger than a coarse human hair, and it's almost impossible to see these very easily with a naked eye. But when you actually get down and start looking at these under a microscope, you find out that turf grasses, and particularly the cool season grasses, have the capacity to develop an incredibly dense root system, especially right at the surface of the soil. The interroot distances here, if you were to make a guesstimate, would be probably about a millimeter, the distance, average distance between any two roots. The importance of that is that the average distance between a root will determine how much competition there is between roots, how much free space water and ions have to migrate between roots. If roots are very close, ions simply do not have much opportunity to pass through them without absorption. I'm going to skip by that. Now, the very high root length densities that we have found in turf grasses are unique to turf. We could not find any data on any plant system with anything like the high root length densities. And give you an example, root length densities in some of the cool season grasses exceed 100, and we've measured as high as 400 centimeters of root per cubic centimeter of soil. 4 meters of roots in 1 cubic centimeter of soil at the top of a profile. This is because of the high density of planting in turf. Corn would probably develop pretty high levels if we planted something higher than 10 plants per square meter, but we don't. Whereas turf, we may have 60,000 tillers per square meter. The more tillers, the more roots you've got. So from this early work, we concluded that turf grasses are very efficient and capable of absorbing nitrogen both very quickly, very efficiently, very completely, due to 2 major factors. Roots develop a high capacity for nitrogen uptake. This is in response to nitrogen deficiency. It's also due to the root architecture, the very high density that's developed by the turf grass plant. How much time do I have, Clint?
About 3 minutes,
okay, in that case. I want to just touch on one more point. One of the questions that kind of came up with this work was how much nitrogen can a turf absorb? We know how much it does absorb from a typical nitrogen application, but what's the upper limit? In other words, you know, can we possibly exceed the capacity of turf grasses with our normal practices? And we didn't have an answer for that. And so we ran an experiment to determine just how much nitrogen a turf grass might absorb. This shows the perennial ryegrass. We had five rates. We had 1/3 of a pound, 1 pound, 1.7, 3.3, and 5 pounds of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet per month. Now, this was supplied on a daily basis, kind of like a fertigation system or a slow-release fertilizer mite. Root systems were fairly constant until we got up to the 3.3 pounds of N per 1,000 square foot per month rate. At that point, they started to deteriorate, shrink, and become more brown. But the real data that I want to share with you today is shown in this graph. And this shows the nitrogen offtake in clippings from these various treatments. The lowest rate, the 1/3 pound at the low, 1 pound, 1.7, 3.3, and 5 pounds of N per 1,000 per month are shown here. And by running a regression on the nitrogen offtake in the clippings, we were able to determine when the nitrogen absorption efficiency broke off. And even at 3.3 pounds of N per 1,000 per month, we were still able to recover about 95% of the N in the clippings. It was only at 5 pounds of nitrogen per month that we saw this drop off in the efficiency to about 64%. So turf grasses appear to have the capacity to absorb and assimilate up to 3 to 4 pounds of nitrogen a month, certainly a lot lower than the applications that we typically follow. And in fact, if you compare the maximum with the standard, you'll see that we're probably fertilizing turf somewhere between 25 and 30% of its maximum capacity. We are intentionally using nitrogen at low levels as a growth regulator and maintaining the deficient conditions that we need for the very high uptake to occur. I think I'll stop there. Do we have time for questions?
We do have time for a question or two. Yes. Hey, Dan?
Yes.
You were mentioning that low nitrogen, starved nitrogen, the plant takes up a lot of nitrogen. But you also need a lot of energy to take up nitrogen,
I tell you, in terms of the energy balance and the storage carbohydrates, it's a trivial amount of energy for the plant.
Yeah. So you need it for carbohydrates, you need it for carbon.
Absolutely.
If you're a plant, would you rather be starved or fat and taken up with the reference to taking up nitrogen?
Oh, I'd much rather be starved.
Starved.
I'd much rather be starved because it gives me a chance, and in fact the plants, they start to accumulate carbohydrates under nitrogen deficiency very quickly. And within a matter of a couple of weeks of nitrogen deficiency, the carbohydrate levels in the tissue go sky high. And you can do a lot of things. I mean, it's money in the bank. You can do a lot of things with it.
There's enough carbohydrate reserves in the starved system to fix the assimilation.
It's only in the starved system that we get enough carbohydrates stored to assimilate these high levels that are absorbed, you know, over that short period of time.
Okay.
A nitrogen replete plant doesn't maintain high storage levels at all.
Okay, thank you, Dan.
Thank you.